What are your thoughts on people becoming millionaires from OnlyFans? Any marketing strategy or insights that we can learn from people making bank? Oh my God, I love this question. What do you reckon, Lindsay?
Oh my God, anytime I could talk about OnlyFans, it's a good day.
I did not expect that to come out of your mouth. Welcome back to the Boss Babe podcast, Lindsay. I'm excited to dive in and we've got some good questions to cover.
Hello, hello. I know. I love a good Q&A episode. Bring it on.
We've been sent some really good questions as well from people in the society. Mm-hmm. I'm here for it.
I love our audience. I feel like they know that we like edgy stuff. I'm like, ask us questions that you, if you like met us in the hallway, you'd be like, wait, I just like 30 seconds. Just give me this like good juicy bit. I'm like, yes, send us those questions.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. If any of you are listening or society members, go into your community and send us questions because we love getting that kind of stuff. Before we dive in, any kind of life updates? I was just talking, I'm building a little pod in my backyard, which sounds like a shed. It's not. It's called like a backyard pod and it's designed, it looks like an extension of your house. It looks good, but we're turning it into a podcast studio because, you know, there's a baby crying or construction or something going on in my background all the time. So I'm excited about that. But I was just saying to Lindsay, like, I'm excited to have that space. So I don't want to work in it 24/7. I think one of the benefits of being able to work from home is I can hear my baby. Like anytime she cries, like she's always falling over. I want to be able to hear her and go out. Whereas if I'm in my little shed in the garden, like I won't be able to hear. So that, yeah, we're going to find the balance. Do you feel the same way?
I do. This is like such a motherload thing. I feel like where there's this, I want to get away from the noise and I need quiet to be able to focus. And, you know, I want organization and not a zone that like kids can come in and disrupt. But then the second you get that, you're like, oh, but like, I want to hear them. I want to see them. I want them to know I'm around if they need me. And the whole point, I think, for a lot of us in getting to work from home and being and loving to work from home is like, whether it's our kids or our dogs or our, you know, whatever comfort thing it is, that we love working from home because that thing is around us all day. And so, I don't know, I've read some of the articles that have come out post-COVID around the psychology of working from home and like how it really in some ways is way worse for productivity and in other ways is way better for productivity. And I'm not an expert on it, but I feel like if I were to have to be completely isolated from my kids again and go to work all day, and even if it was in my backyard, I would definitely not love it.
No, I wouldn't either. And I mean, even just like the childcare thing that we keep talking about. So you guys, I swear I'm like a master manifester. Maybe I'm going to create a manifestation course. No, I'm not, team. I promise I'm not. But so I've been talking to Lindsay and we were kind of having this conversation, weren't we, of I'm not sure that I want full-time childcare anymore. I really love it when it's just me and Noemi and we're chill and like we get to go out and all this stuff, and I really love my days with her. My nanny finishes at 4 each day, and yes, I get a good chunk of the afternoon with her, but it just hasn't been feeling like enough. And so that's been coming up, and Lindsay, when you came and visited, I remember we had such an in-depth conversation about it. And then 2 days after that big conversation where it was like, you know what, I'm really clear, I don't want full-time childcare anymore, I felt really bad because my nan, like, I don't want to then like go with my nanny or reduce her hours or whatever. And 2 days later, she let me know she's moving states and is going into a different career. And I literally said to her, I was like, oh my God, no offense, but I feel like I manifested this because I've been wanting to go a different direction. So that's been really interesting. I feel like that's my biggest life update.
Yeah. No, it was a good conversation because I feel like sometimes you feel crazy for like you've built something and you've cleared space and like you've found quote unquote balance between childcare and work. And then you're like, well, but now it just doesn't, the balance doesn't feel right anymore. Like I'm in a different season, or we got the big business goal achieved and now I want to change things up again. And I think sometimes we increase our childcare or like we want more childcare, but we're afraid to say we want less. And I think it's a boundary stretching for you. And when we were talking about it, I'm like, I think it's one of these, you know, trust your gut moments where if that's what you're being led to, the business, like we'll adapt the business to you having less childcare. I think that's what we get to do. And we just finished building out our team. And, you know, we've been in, since I took over this role, like 6 months of really looking at the team and looking at the priorities and what being ruthless about systematizing and simplifying everything. And I feel like we've just hit like cruise altitude, you know, I'm like, okay, perfect timing for you to manifest a little bit more space in your day for mom life, you know? And I think one of the things we were saying to each other is like, what's the point of all of this if you feel like you don't get to spend any time with your kids, you know? And I think this is such a nuance of a lot of what we talk about around freedom is everyone's definition of freedom is different. And in certain seasons, freedom feels like a lot of childcare. So you have the freedom to focus on work. And in this season that you're moving into, it's like actually freedom feels like less work and letting the team do more and more time with Noemi, where just me and Noemi, where it's not childcare, there's not a nanny around too. And I think it's beautiful. And from my seat, like, I think there's a lot of us that when we had young babies, at least I feel this way, it's like, I didn't have the choice. I had to have full-time care because I had to go earn during those hours. And so when you have the choice, the ability to lean into it and trust that the business or whatever it is that you're working on will continue to support you as you stay in alignment as a mother. Obviously, I'm like full 100% yes on making that happen. So, and then, yeah, you're a master manifester in so many ways. But yeah, that was crazy. You were like, guess what? I'm like, what? She just told me she's moving. Oh my God. I'm like, holy crap. You manifest so fast, so fast.
So fast. I also love how we were just talking earlier and you were like, yeah, was it Wesley asked you to spend the Wednesday with
Sawyer.
Him? Oh, Sawyer mm-hmm. asked you. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And I think I just love that level of freedom. Like when your kid says they want to spend the day with you, like to be able to just turn around and say, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do it. I think that's freedom right there. It's not the big stuff. Like we talk about it all the time. It's the small stuff. It's the little things of like, oh, my kid wants to spend the afternoon with me. Yeah. Why not? Let's go do it.
Yeah. No, I we're entering that phase of life where he's almost seven and he's old enough to tell me what he needs, which is sometimes, you know, a little much because he tells me what he needs in ways that I'm like, well, that's not how you ask. But he's also so emotive and like so emotionally connected. And I just want to nurture this, you know, in a little boy. I'm like, yes, please keep telling me what you need for your emotions. And yeah, he was like, I just really need some Mama Sawyer time. Like, could we do some one-on-one stuff? And so we looked at my calendar together and I was like, look, there's this big open block on Wednesday. He's like, okay, could I book from 2 to 4? And I was like, oh my God, you're so cute. But yeah, it's like, and I told you, I felt very edgy, like saying yes and taking an afternoon in the middle of the week off. And I feel like that's the phase of life I'm in where those are it's more of me growing again to go like, oh, it is okay to step away. And like, there is a big team, but they're fine without me. And I could take an afternoon off and turn Slack off and like everyone will be okay. And my little boy needs his mama, you know, the sweetest thing.
I love it. And I think having that kind of freedom, having those choices, that's so much more motivating. Because if you're working super hard and you have no freedom at all, that's when the questions of, well, why am I doing this comes up? Whereas when you have the freedom to say, yeah, let's do it. And 2 days, cool, let's do it. And you get to spend that time. For me, I just feel like when I fill my cup up like that, I just feel a lot more motivated to do the things that, you know, to do what I'm working. So I think we should do more of this.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, life update, it's all kind of that thing. Like this weekend, I felt the desire to sit and work all day and put the kids on screens and like, be like, let's just chill at home, which usually chill at home means like they chill and play and I work, or like RT and I both work. And, you know, on and off, of course, we also try to engage, like, I sound like a terrible parent. Like we just all sit on screens all day, but sometimes it turns into that, you know, because I feel this urgency to start to work on Sundays to like get ahead on the weeks. And this last weekend I was like, look, no, we're doing something for the family. Like we're getting out of the house. We went up to the cabin. We had to hike in. It was like 3 feet of snow. And so everybody got worn out, you know, and it was like very analog and it was exactly what we needed. And it was a good reminder too of the freedom of this entrepreneurial mindset where you can work at any time. And so I end up working a lot of weekends just to get ahead, you know, or to catch up on stuff that I don't get to during the week. And also there's the gift of being able to say, we've worked hard for all these things that we have in our life. And, you know, one of them being this beautiful cabin that we own. And I'm like, let's go spend a day actually like just enjoying nature and not on our screens. And everybody had such a great time. And like the boys loved it. I think they're finally at the age where they can handle like a mile long walk. And I got back in the afternoon and I was like, oh my God, I haven't even looked at my phone. You know, like this is a day like that feels like freedom to me where I can get a whole day of not even feeling compelled to look at my phone. It wasn't that I had to say, I'm putting my phone aside. It was like, we were just out and about and there wasn't a reason to look at the phone.
I love that you're doing that. I think that's so important. I have a complete no work boundary on a weekend. I don't do any work on a weekend. I feel like that's my generator life. Like, I need the time off to just feel really recharged. I delete Slack off my phone, emails off my phone. I often delete Instagram off my phone. I'm normally so dark on a weekend, like not posting. I'm not like the best influencer, but I take the apps off and I just absolutely love it. And then Monday comes around again and I'm by noon, I'm like, okay, let's get the apps back on. But I'm not like straight in on it. I feel like it just recharges me so much that when I come back, I'm like, let's go.
Yeah. No,
I hope you need a no working challenge on a weekend and you feel like, I think I do.
Well, and I think people like this is, I feel like people are like, there's no way you don't. And I will attest, Natalie does not work on the weekends.
No, I don't.
In fact, like the only thing that she'll respond to is like a podcast. If I share a podcast or like something that's not actual like Boss Babe related questions, because like we'll ideate or we'll like, you have to listen to this podcast and talk about like stuff happening in the world. But, or like, what were we texting about yesterday? Baking, you were making scones that I
never. Oh yeah. I would like taking pictures of homemaker life. That's yeah. You'll get a response if you text me something like that on a weekend. But otherwise, like, you know, I wouldn't, yeah. I just don't want.
No, it's real. And like, I'll attest to it. And I also think that that's like a perception that a lot of people, one of the podcasts I listened to over the weekend actually was talking about perception versus perspective and how your perception is like without thought, you know, like you just have this perception of someone and you don't really have all the context and you don't really, and it tends to be like the fight or flight. Like my perception is what I'm seeing and that's the truth. And perspective is like taking your perception and adding context and asking yourself questions and adding your values back in and questioning what you believe. And then you have perspective and then you can look at the same situation and go, okay, now that I've applied perspective to this, maybe my reaction's a little different or my thoughts are different. And I feel like there's perception in social media and in success in this world that we work in, where in order to get to this level of success and to maintain this level of success, you're always working. And we say it so much in freedom-based business. It's like a freedom-based business does not require that you work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's not freedom. And perspective really gives you that when you look at people who are living the true life and being authentic about it, you're like, no, with perspective, you see Natalie being with her kids. You see the values in our company. You see how we structure our curriculum. Like, we leave space for life to happen in between all of this. And it's such a huge part of what we believe in and how you live, how I live, and how we run the company.
Totally. Was that the CIA one? Mm-hmm. On Darius? Yeah. You're so good with recall. Like, I listened to it, but I couldn't have recalled it. But yeah, I love that. And part of me thinks, you know, there's a certain level of it, which is, yes, you need to get your company into a place where you're freed up enough to do that. Like, you know, this wasn't my reality a couple of years ago. I didn't have this kind of freedom. So yes, that's part of it. And then the second part is retraining that workaholism, that addictive workaholism. Retraining that is not always easy. And even, you know, once you've retrained it out of you, it's not one and done. It's a practice. I say that all the time. It's like, yes, I love my freedom and I've built the business the way that it is to have it, but to not work when, you know, it's tempting sometimes, and I have to practice it. I have to practice my boundaries, not looking at my phone in the morning. You know, I have to practice it because it's, I think, in my nature to be quite addicted to work. So that was interesting.
Yeah. It's such a good call out. I mean, it is a practice. And I think as we talk about it a lot, like as you heal from your like little inner child performance wounding, you know, where you're like, this is how I learned to get love, was to just like do things all the time and work and achieve and, you know, people please and stuff. And ultimately, I forwarded this to you, or we were talking about it recently, like people pleasing is really just a cover for self-abandonment. You know, you're doing something to please someone else at the sacrifice of yourself. And I think a lot of our overworking tends to come from that place of like self-abandoning. And it is a practice to come back and go, no, what did I commit to do this weekend? What did I commit to myself? What did I commit to my family? And doing that instead.
Oh, that's really good. And you know what else? I think it's being afraid to be in stillness and silence too, because like the amount of times you take your phone with you to go to the bathroom or like little things like that, where you're just addicted to the apps. I call it like being addicted to the circuit, where you're on your Instagram, then your Slack, then your email, then your TikTok, then you just, like it's a circuit and you get addicted to the circuit. And breaking that as well, I think it's all under the same realm of like, often you don't want to go to the loo without your phone because sitting in silence or stillness might be really overwhelming. It might be confronting. But then there's little pockets of time throughout the day where actually that would be really powerful. I just read a quote on James Clear's email list the other day, and it was like, people talk about getting the best ideas in the shower, and it's not because the shower is a big idea generating machine. It's because it's one of the only times in the day when they're not being stimulated by anything and they haven't got their mobile phone in their hand. And I was like, that's it. And I think it's all grouped under the same workaholism umbrella.
I feel so called out right now because, you know, when I listen to most of my podcasts and text you shit, it's like from the shower.
You text me in the shower?
I do, because I like listen to podcasts in the shower and I take like long everyday everything showers, you know, and then I'm listening to a podcast and then I'll be like, oh, idea. But
I mean, you do consume a lot of podcasts, though, when it works in your favor. You're a very small individual.
Well, thank you. But I feel very called out around the circuit because it is that same thing. Like,
I've definitely witnessed you on the circuit. And also I go on the circuit too. I am not immune to the circuit. I totally do. When I bring awareness to it, I have to just be like, oh shit, I'm in the circuit. Put my phone down.
It's funny that we can see each other in the circuit because we talk on so many platforms. So I'm like, I like your Instagram. And then I go message you back in Slack and then I respond to your text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in the circuit.
Oh my God, that's such a good call out.
Uh-huh. Okay. The circuit's real.
The awareness of the circuit. Now, everyone listening, for the next 24 hours, like, you have to watch yourself enter the circuit. And how do you break the circuit? Because it is like, I feel like I do it at bedtime too, where I'm like, okay, one more pass through the circuit. And that's then I'll put my phone down.
One more pass through the circuit. And then it's like, wait, what did I gain from going on the circuit again?
Well, one more pass is 10 minutes. Like, it's not 30 seconds, you know, if you get sucked into something.
And sometimes you'll wake up. I'm not saying you, I'm pointing at you. Sometimes we'll wake up, get on the circuit, and then go to sleep still on the circuit. And that's where I think it's like bringing awareness to it. For me, I notice if I'm in the circuit, I'm definitely not as present with Noemi. And one thing that I'll do once I like close my laptop, it's 4 p.m. religiously every day, I'll leave my phone in my office and me and Noemi will go outside and often Stephen will join too and we'll go on a long walk. And that is often enough to break the circuit that when I come back, I don't feel like I need to go check my phone and get on the circuit. I'll come back, start cooking dinner. But sometimes I do need a bit of a pattern interrupt. And I've now brought my awareness to it a lot that I can like shortcut it faster, but definitely by no means perfect. Definitely get on the circuit.
Such a good call out. bringing awareness to something like that, even it's like, there's no prescription, obviously, like you're going to do what you're going to do, but just having the awareness of being on it and being able to interrupt the mindlessness of it is the first step to like taking control of your time and making it feel less addictive.
Totally.
Okay. Right, well, now I'm like spiraling in my mind.
Listen, we don't gatekeep here at Boss Babe, and so I'm not going to hold back on telling you about my favorite bra ever. Skims is our podcast sponsor, and I'm giving it to you for real when I say their bras are worth the hype for the amazing support and shape that they give. But also, what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are. Even the underwire bras I can wear all day long and barely even notice. I tried the Wireless Foam t-shirt bra a little while ago, and it's literally the best t-shirt bra I've ever owned. I wear it every day under like casual t-shirts, sweaters. I probably need it in every single color now because it's basically the only bra that I wear. The straps are adjustable. The material is the best for all day comfort. So if you are looking for a new bra that will work under practically anything and are so over that take your bra off the second you get home feeling, you have to try Skims. Their bras are now available in 62 sizes from 30A to 46H. Shop Skims bra at skims.com. That's skims.com. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $75. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that we sent you. After you place your order, just select podcast in the survey and then select our show in the drop down menu that follows. That's skims.com. We did get some good questions from our society members. So let's just go in the deep end. The first one is, what are your thoughts on people becoming millionaires from OnlyFans? Any marketing strategy or insights that we can learn from people making bank? Oh my God, I love this question. What do you reckon, Lindsay?
Oh my God, anytime I could talk about OnlyFans, it's a good day. Oh my God, you guys. Okay.
I did not expect that to come out of your mouth.
I am obsessed with OnlyFans, not because I'm a member of you, no, because of this. I feel like I could have planted this question. I did not, but somebody that knows me probably asked this question.
You're obsessed with OnlyFans. Oh my God.
As a business model, because it fascinates me to think about, like, this used to be, this is the oldest profession or whatever, like selling yourself, you know, like sex sells. We all know these quips, right? And I'm like, look, this took off in 2020 when everybody went home and it's like, okay, what do I do? Like, I've got to feed my family. And OnlyFans, like, business model is freaking brilliant. If you haven't ever heard of the business model, OnlyFans charges all of their creators like 20 to 30% of gross revenue on the platform. So every dollar you make, you're paying OnlyFans like 30% of it right off the top. So it's incredibly profitable. And all they are is just an aggregator. Like, it's just a social media platform. Basically, they're not adding any, there's no search on OnlyFans and there's no algorithm. So, like, at least in my, I don't know this for sure, but
have you got the app?
Yeah, I do.
I've never looked at it. I don't know anything about it. So maybe you can educate me. But how do people get famous on OnlyFans? They have to build another platform and then direct
yes.
people there?
So you have to build another platform. And that's why I think people really underappreciate the work that it takes to keep up on OnlyFans. Two reasons. One, you have to build on another platform, which means you have to be good at social media of some kind. You're either on Instagram, Twitter, one of the other, like, you know, TikTok. I know there's a bunch on like Reddit and all these other things. And the women that seem to do the best on it are everywhere. They're everywhere. Like, they have, I'm like, there's no way one woman is running this content machine. Like, they've got to have a whole team. And then the second thing that I think people don't understand about OnlyFans, that I was just having this conversation with a friend the other day because he met a guy that does this. It's usually like the people, you make your money on OnlyFans in the messaging. Like, people pay to send you DMs or like you to say something naughty to them in the DMs or whatever. And again, like, most of these women who are making, that you hear making bank on OnlyFans, have millions of subscribers or hundreds of thousands of subscribers. And you and I know, like, we can barely keep up with our DMs and we get however many a day. I'm like, okay, there's no way one person.
We aren't being paid for our feet in the DMs.
Sadly. Nope, exactly. But like, so I learned recently that there are whole agencies out there of like people in the Philippines that are VAs that are the people actually doing the DMing.
Brilliant.
So when you're on OnlyFans and you're talking to like some hot chick that you think is the one sending you naughty messages back, you're probably being DM'd by a man in the Philippines working in this VA agency.
Jim.
Yeah.
Jim.
And I'm like, this is so funny to me because like people like us that go, so I've studied it as a business model because I'm like, there's something about these women on OnlyFans, like they're hyper viral on social media. Like
you're right.
So much traffic. I'm like, what are they doing right on social? Like, it's interesting to me to learn. And then I just love, like, I love a good business model. So I'm always studying. But what I think that the consumer doesn't understand about OnlyFans is you're not talking to the creator. You're talking to somebody on her team, you know? And so then I'm like, what's the psychology of this? Because surely
they probably don't care.
But they don't care. And that's the thing that I think is so fascinating. So I don't know if that's helpful to whoever asked this question, but it's like, I think it's brilliant. And like, ultimately I'm the consummate, like, hey, if you find a way to make money, go make money, like, get it, girl. You know, like, and if you're good with OnlyFans and your morals are good with that, like, go participate in the free market economy, please. Like, go be an entrepreneur.
I feel the same. I'm like, why judge if that's their way of making bank? Like, I've seen some P&Ls from women on OnlyFans. I don't fully understand the business model, but I've seen their P&Ls and I'm like, holy shit, they are making
unreal.
So much more money than us.
Yeah.
And I just think more power to them. If that's the way that they make money, go for it. But wait, I have more questions. So I thought like there was people on there just like making bank from selling pictures of their feet or whatever. But if that's the case, how are they driving traffic? Is there an algorithm that, like, what's the funnel?
Yeah. The other day, the team and I were talking about how much our audience loves biohacking. And whenever we release content based around creating better habits for our lifestyle and health, you all seem to really soak it up and request more. So I wanted to share about our podcast sponsor, Prolon, today, because I've never seen a company like this. Prolon is a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making cells believe that they're fasting. There are so many strategic benefits to fasting, and Prolon helps you hit these goals without actually needing to fast. Prolon's 5-day program includes snacks, soups, and beverages, all designed to keep your body in a fasted state. And you get everything prepackaged, labeled, and ready to go, so there's no guesswork. It's super simple and it works. Extended fasting of at least 2 to 3 days has proven to produce unique benefits like cellular rejuvenation, metabolic support, and increased cardiovascular health. So If you're ready for a fasting program that doesn't leave you hungry or exhausted and instead gives you more energy, I highly recommend giving Prolon a try. Right now, Prolon is offering Boss Babe podcast listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/bossbabe. That's prolonlife.com/bossbabe for this special offer. prolonlife.com/bossbabe.
So the funnel is off platform, and then you link to your OnlyFans through a link in bio, or, you know, some other intermediary store, like a Stan store. Like, there's lots of those intermediary, you know, link aggregators in the bio, because a lot of the social media platforms won't actually let you put your OnlyFans URL in your bio. So they're linking out to like a landing page, essentially, and then a landing page directs to the OnlyFans. But I've seen like, yeah, their P&Ls are unreal, and they make money through subscription, which is usually pretty low. Like, I think the average subscription on OnlyFans is like less than $10 a month. So that's not what's making the most of the money, but you can solicit for tips and for like direct payment through the DMs. And so I think most of the money gets made in conversation and developing relationships with your subscribers. And I think that's what's fascinating, because it's like, okay, this is still like a content business model. Like, it's similar to what we do.
Yeah, we're just not paid as highly for it.
Yeah, we're not paid as highly, and like, we don't develop the same, like, there's not intimacy, you know, I guess, in other ways. But like, yeah, they're, no matter what they're selling, I mean, there's lots of stuff on OnlyFans. So supposedly, like, it's not all sex. It's some coaching and like acting, yeah, and like all these other things.
No one's joining for the coaching.
Right. I think most of it is pornography or similar. But yeah, the fact that they have to push from an outside platform and get people there is like, the funnel is essentially viral social media that gets into the explore pages of the people looking for that kind of stuff. And then you see this sexy reel in the explore page. You click on that creator, you follow them. And then in their stories and in their bio, they're just constantly posting the link to go to their profile or their account, you know, their OnlyFans. And then you go subscribe, and some of them are paid, some are free, and you make the money in the DMs. So
yeah. Not too dissimilar, really, then from the funnels that we teach.
Yeah,
I love it.
And
well, good for them.
The last point I'll say on OnlyFans that I studied, because I thought this was so fascinating from a marketing standpoint, like a year and a half ago, this huge news came out. They're not a US-based company. I actually think they're British. I think they're a British company, or somewhere in Europe. This big news came out that like all the credit card processors were going to stop running transactions for OnlyFans because it was pornography, and OnlyFans is going to cease to exist because they can't run credit card transactions. So if you're an OnlyFans creator, you got to leave the platform if what you're selling is sexual in nature, yada, yada, yada. It blew up all over the mainstream media. And it got mega picked up by the Christian conservative media, because it was like, oh good, they're clearing house. Like, they're going to really clean up this platform, and this is sex work. And, you know, a lot of news came out that was very anti sex work. And I remember after that all happened, basically it was like a week or two in the news cycle. And then news came out that like, they worked it out, and actually, never mind, like, all good with the credit card processors. We figured it out, probably because everybody realized they were going to lose millions and billions of dollars. And OnlyFans put out something, I think like a couple months later, that I remember seeing, that said that their subscription rate from like highly conservative areas in the United States went up like 50% during
what?
Like, as the trailing time after that whole marketing thing came out. And I was like, oh my God, like all they did was publicize and bring into the awareness that OnlyFans existed to this whole Christian conservative populace that like didn't even know it existed previously. And so OnlyFans, like, I don't remember where I read it, but it was this like piece that basically said, like, was this just a whole stunt to get attention from a whole new demographic of people that normally wouldn't even consume the stuff, and now they know it exists, now are aware of it, and now have become subscribers. And I was like, damn, if that was a stunt, whoever, I mean, I'm not saying it is, and I don't know, and I, you know, this is just my opinion, I have no idea, but I was like, talk about marketing and like virality and controlling the narrative in the media. That's a great example. So
that is hilarious.
This is my case study on OnlyFans.
Well, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah, I think more power to them. However you want to monetize, you know, if it's ethical, go for it. And that's
not illegal.
Yeah. But you know, you're not scamming people. Go for it. If people want to pay for that and you want to deliver that, then go ahead.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, thanks for that OnlyFans lesson. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Great business model. Next one is, I've been resonating so much with you, Natalie, these past few months because I'm going through a breakup with a longtime business partner and it's been so painful. How can I get through it? What advice do you have to keep things from spiraling out of control? Like, how did you manage your nervous system through all of what you went through?
Oh, that's a good question. And I think really that this probably can just go even wider to anyone that's going through a transition like this, whether friendship, business, any of it. It's hard. I think going through transitionary seasons are actually just, it's just really, really hard. That's the first thing that I'll say. I think just giving yourself grace to know that it is a hard time. And even when you go in with the best of intentions on both sides, you know, there's still going to be a lot of emotion. There's still going to be a lot of things that happen. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs. So no matter your intention going in, it is going to be really hard. I would say the best thing that I did for myself during that time was just really invest in resourcing myself. You know, have the therapist or the coaches, whoever it is that you want to lean on to get advice from, to talk things through, do your own work. I think in those kinds of situations, you really want to be proud of how you showed up. You don't want to be the person on a call that's yelling and calling names or anything like that. And, you know, for the two of us, we'll openly say, like, that never happened for the two of us. We never got on calls and spoke to each other like that. And we had a really big business together and there was a lot to work out. I don't think it ever needs to go down that path if you both do your own work individually. And I think being able to come to those conversations respectfully, and yes, they're going to be tough conversations. It's not always going to feel good. But to be able to come to those conversations doing your own work, I think is really, really powerful. Of course, you can't control whether someone else is going to do their own work, but you can always control your work and how you show up and how you react. So I would say that first and foremost, looking after your nervous system is really, really important. And, you know, with anything, whether it's changes in your friendships or business partners and partnerships or even divorces, you know, it's often going to take a lot longer than you want it to take. And I think going into it, just knowing that, I think a lot of the stress comes from trying to make something go a different way to what it's actually going. Oh, I just wish it was over. Oh, I wish it was going faster. You're really resisting just surrendering and allowing the process to unfold however the process needs to unfold. I think there's a lot to be said for just surrendering into the process. I went into that not thinking it was going to be done in a month. You know, it took probably 6 months for us to come to an agreement that felt like a win-win for all of us. And I'm sure there were many points in that process. Both of us wanted just things to be agreed upon faster, but just going into it, accepting this is a process going to take probably longer than I want it to. And I'm committed to being patient. And yeah, it's just a hard situation. I don't know if that's any advice, but I'm a big advocate of doing your own work always, really.
Yeah. I think the thing I witnessed with you and the way you've spoken about it publicly and privately, which by the way, you say the same thing publicly and privately, but is you've gone into detail privately with me on like what you just said around taking your time and not rushing, and that like your ability to show up calm and like, even though you wanted it done worse than anything you wanted, coming in with that energy was never going to work in your favor, and how you had to be so practiced and so controlled in not rushing it and not being like, fuck it, let's just be done, you know, and knowing that the outcome you wanted was worth the discomfort of sitting there day by day and having it drag on and like having to have additional conversations. And every time you got to an agreement and something changed a week later, it was like, okay, I just have to trust. And I feel like that's such a lesson in all of life, all of business, is anytime, and you've said this to me, it's like, if you show up in this and you want it done right now, it's not going to work. Like nobody responds to that energy positively. No one likes that energy, no matter what context you're in. And the person who can stay the calmest the longest and like the most neutral the longest in a negotiation is going to win. And so I think that's really hard for a lot of us to come to a negotiation where there's a lot at stake and not advocate for our position and just like pound the other person into the ground about what we want, but instead to show up and be like curious and ask questions and trust that it's going to work out. Like, so hard to do. And you said it, but it's practice. You know, that is major control over yourself. And that requires coming into that situation, having done a lot of work leading into it. And I think that's the thing a lot of us don't want to hear. It's like, it's a lot of work. It doesn't go quick.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things I will say on that. I had a coach who practiced conscious leadership. You can get the book Conscious Leadership. And in there, one of the principles of conscious leadership is win for all. And that's one mindset that I had going into this was, I would like this to be a win for all. That really helped. So I didn't go in thinking, this is what I want. This is what it looks like for me to win. I went into it thinking, if this happened and we felt like this, this would feel like a win. So it was quite fluid in all the different ways that that could pan out. But I wanted it to feel like a win for all parties involved, because at the end of the day, it's two human beings discussing the future of a business, a non-human entity. So let's take care of the two human beings. And then whatever's meant to be for the business entity will be. That definitely really supports, like, remember who the humans are in the negotiation and remember what the business is. And the second thing, which again, maybe it's easier said than done, but I probably wasn't seeing it so much as a negotiation and more just a figuring out of what's the best path. What is the best? Like, I didn't have an idea of what that best path was. It changed so many different times. I don't know that either of us went into it with like, this is the path, this is the best path. I think we both went into it like, let's feel it out, because we didn't really expect to come to this. There was not like a big lead up. It was just like, oh, we have different visions. Okay, cool. Let's sit and work out what this looks like. But I will say, regardless of the outcome, I already felt like I'd won for me, because I was happy before and I was going to be happy after. And my happiness wasn't resting on an outcome. And I think that's really, really important. It's whenever anyone's driving towards a goal, right? If you are driving towards that goal because you need the goal to be happy, then there's a bit of a problem in there. You want to be happy before you have the goal. You want your happiness to be in the present, not in the future. Or like, I'll be happy when I make $1 million. I'll be happy when I hire that team member. I'll be happy when, I think, really being able to practice, well, I'm happy now and it'll be a bonus when. That really helped. Again, sure, it's like one of those things that's easier said than done, but I do think going through those experiences, you learn a lot and you get a lot of perspective and you learn ways to do things or not to do things.
Yeah, so good. I love that question. And I do think it's relatable to any kind of transition or like closing of one thing, opening of another, you know? And I think that's another nuance to some of this stuff that I think it is harder to manage in modern day is like, when something's closing, whether it's a business partnership, a marriage, a relationship, a friendship, whatever it is, like we're so stimulated with all the other things we could do now instead of this, you know? And I feel like brains and psychology, like we need to close something and like grieve it and let that door fully shut and let the emotions clear before we open another one. So even if you've done a good job getting to a win for both kind of situation, there's also this opportunity in the space between before you open the next thing and giving yourself time to learn from what happened, grieve, rebuild, you know, patch any holes in the facade of your home that you live in, your metaphorical home, before you go invite new people in, you know? And I think a lot of us, we get what we wanted in something or we don't get what we wanted, but we're done with something and we're like, okay, what's next? Like on to the next without giving that interim time. And I think it's so important to have transitions and to be in the void and be in that like cocooning phase where you're like, okay, I need to integrate this mess of what happened here, even if it turned out the way I wanted it, and be really calculated and intentional about what comes next.
That grief part's real. And I think it's something that you can't shortcut. Like you said, no matter what chapter you're closing, I'm sure there's going to be grief in there and you have to feel it. You cannot bypass it, because if you do, it's going to come out later on at some point.
Yeah. Grief is a whole, we don't have to get into it, but they're like the grief in these little moments of closing, even when you're happy, something's closed, like there's the memories and, you know, like the reverence for what you built. You've talked about this with Boss Babe and everything. It's like, there was still so much amazing stuff you guys did together that even though you were ready to part ways and go do your own things, like you still miss the relationship you had when you were in the thick of it together. And, you know, so it's so human anytime something closed to allow there to be space to grieve it. And I think our culture just does not do well with grief in general. And I think there's a lot of encouragement in like the self-help world that we live a lot in, and in the personal development, where it's like, move on to the next thing, like get the next thing going, use this as the catapult into the next thing, like motivation, and not as much focus on like, hey, transition, and this space, taking time to really feel the darker aspects of this and maybe some of the negative emotions.
That's where the growth comes from. Feeling that and coming on the other side of that, I think that's where you get the growth. I think when you try and shortcut and blast through things or push it down, push it away, you miss out on a lot of growth opportunities. The growth comes in all of that emotion and feeling and moving through it, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's where growth, strength, all of that comes from.
Yeah. Oof. I mean, yeah, I think we're an example of it here, even in Boss Babe and everything. It's like, you've talked about it. You took the next 6 months afterwards to really sit in it and look at the business and make decisions from a place of like rebuilding and like grieving it and allowing it to be something different in the new iteration and not holding on to the past. And like, just like a new relationship, you know, you had to create a new relationship with Boss Babe, and it wasn't something you could do in 2 weeks. And so I think there's evidence, or if you're going through something like this, like the person who asked the question, I think there's evidence all around of ways to stay really present in every phase of it. And if you do that and you don't self-abandon and you don't try to jump steps, you know, you're going to feel it's going to be really hard. It is really hard, and it gets better, and it gives you opportunity once you're ready to do something.
I have had a Masterclass membership for years now, and it's still one of my favorite educational platforms to this day. Masterclass is one of our podcast sponsors, and I love putting in my AirPods and listening to their latest classes on the airplane during long travel days or when I'm taking a solo walk and really want that dose of inspiration. If you haven't explored it yet, go to masterclass.com/bossbabe and scroll through some of the categories. I really think you'll love what you see. There are over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every single month. I thought Mark Cuban's recent class, Win Big in Business, was really interesting. He talks about Shark Tank, how to evaluate risk, and strategy to market smarter. It was so good. Not only does Masterclass have tangible business development classes that you can watch at your desk or listen to on the go, but it also includes classes in 10 other categories, ranging from food, home and lifestyle, music, wellness, design, and so much more. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. Right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/bossbabe. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/bossbabe. masterclass.com/bossbabe. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass.
You knew.
I love that. Good question. Okay, the next question is, what's the worst advice you've ever received in your life or business?
Oh, man.
I have one.
Yeah, you go. I'm like, that's a great question. I don't have to think about it.
I feel like the worst advice I've ever received is the advice I get when it's very black or white. Advice that is very black or white, I feel like is bad advice because it doesn't take into account all of the different nuances of different personality types, business types, choices, preferences. Like, there's one right way to do something. I've learned it's not very often there's only one way to do something. And most of the ways, whether it's business advice, most things do work if you focus on it and that's the way you choose to make it work. But going black and white, like, this is the way a negotiation should go, this is the way you should build your business, this is the way you should scale, I often think is quite bad advice. This is the way you should resolve a conflict, even if it's in your personal life. Often there's a lot of nuance that, and I think experience helps you to learn where you get to pay attention to that nuance.
Do you feel like that type of advice is also made harder for you because you're such like a, you're so tuned in and you're so self-aware, and you trust yourself that like when someone gives you black or white advice, like it immediately, I don't know, as you're talking, I'm like, black or white advice to me feels, if it butts up against my intuition, I'm like, ugh, and it feels almost more repulsive because intuition has gray to it. You know, you're like, I could see both sides. I don't know. Like I feel called to this, but I just feel like someone like you who's so self-aware and has had to make so many hard decisions in your life, black and white advice is going to feel even more triggering.
Yeah, when I see, say it's someone in business giving black or white advice, I normally just get the vibe of inexperience. Like, I can totally understand why you're sharing that, because that's what worked for you in your limited journey. And if you start to extrapolate into other businesses and other industries, that's probably not going to fly. So that's often where my flag comes up of like, yes, and there are also many other ways. And I think you often have to run many races to see the other perspectives on it. Because I'm sure I've given tons of black and white advice in the past from a place of just not knowing any different.
Yeah. So interesting. It's another thing to bring into your awareness, you know, as when you're listening, I'm like, oh yeah. Like the tendency is to want to give black and white advice. You're like, do it this way. Uh-huh. Cause that's like, sometimes we think we know better, you know, or yeah, we're speaking from our own limited experience, and to understand that for the person receiving it from us, getting it in that delivery may feel very confronting and very off-putting. It's like, okay, how else could I suggest these things or be more curious and ask questions that get to these answers without it being like me telling them what to do? It's so interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely a flag for me.
Yeah. It's funny for me. It's like it's kind of similar, but it's around money. I feel like the advice, I can usually take most people's advice. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm still going to do what I want. But like in most cases, but with money, I think so much advice, and I'm so like such an elder millennial when I say this, but like the boomer mindset around money is such the bad advice in my mind of like, don't explore new things, like stay in the safe job, save all your money in a 401k that you're never going to touch for until you're retired. Like all these mindsets around, I think it's ultimately like risk aversion, because they come obviously from a time where things were less abundant. They had less opportunity than we did. But like all this advice I got when I was in my 20s of like, stay in the safe career, like just move up the ladder. Don't take risks. Like, you know, be happy with 3 to 5% raises. Like that's more than I got, you know, and like put all this money in your 401k, and you should drive, like you should only, you know, like all the ways of like minimizing living and experiencing life right now for this like future outcome of retirement, you know? And I'm like, well, I'm 25. Like retirement feels very unreal to me, you know, like that's a future version of me that is not real. And so,
right.
That advice really, I think, set me on a path, not always a good one. I mean, I'm admitting that like I'm not the best with money, and I don't have the best money mindset, and I definitely don't have like millions of dollars saved for retirement at this point. But
you're getting better. Say in my past I didn't have a strong money mindset.
In my past I didn't.
I think you're getting really good in this area.
I am getting better here. And it's a lot of awareness around this thing that like, oh, I can isolate some of these things that are like these scripts that run in my mind. I think a lot of it is stuff that like I, for so long I thought was negative money mindset. And now I'm realizing is like just advice I got that I don't have to accept anymore. And like, God bless my boomer parents, but like a lot of it's from them. And I'm like, oh, that's how they chose to live their lives. I don't have to do that. And so for it's that bad advice, but it's also like putting some space between what is someone else's advice and what is your actual belief system, and allowing those two things to be mutually exclusive.
Yeah. I like that a lot. It's good advice. Hindsight also is amazing. The amount of advice like you get and then a few years later you look back on, you're like, why the heck did I listen to that?
Yeah. And I get it. Like parents looking out for their kids, like you're always, I feel like every generation is always going to be more conservative about something than their kids' generation is. And it's like, well, when I was a kid, so, you know, there's that, all of that to it too. I'm sure like they're going to retire with a lot more money in the bank than I will, but like also they, you know, like they haven't explored all the things that they wanted to do with their lives. They didn't get to create the things they might've wanted to create it. And you know, so there's a trade-off, and I feel like money is one of these things for all of us where taking the advice with a grain of salt and really trusting that if you are educated and you do the work, money is something that you can create your own relationship with.
Amen. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that advice woven in the advice.
You want to do one more?
Yeah, this one's a really good one. You want to read it? Actually?
We talk about this a lot. Okay, do you go to therapy? Do you believe in therapy? What are your thoughts on therapy, Natalie?
Oh, I thought we were going to do the one after that. So let's do two final questions.
Let's do two. Okay.
Love therapy. Big advocate of it. I think it's great. I think everyone should do it. And I'm in it. And I love it.
Same. I mean, resounding yes to therapy, like normalized therapy and also therapy. I think the thing too, here's another little relic of my mind spirals. I feel like the therapy of the old, like, I think therapy has shifted a lot. And I think people, when they think of therapy, think of like super expensive. You go sit on a couch and they don't really say anything to you. You just talk to somebody for an hour and that you don't get any advice or anything. And like, you're supposed to kind of feel like that's helpful, you know? And personally, I don't know what your therapy is like, but what I consider to be therapy now is much more like coaching and much more like somebody who really knows me, who holds me accountable, who does sometimes share advice with me because they know me so well and has been through things that I've that I'm going through, and they're a little bit ahead of me. And so they know, they have perspective that they can share that I really respect. Whereas like traditional talk therapy from a psychiatrist sitting on a couch is like, okay, here's tools. And like, I did a lot of that in my 20s of like learning the psychological tools to solve problems and to get through conflict and to understand thought patterns and trauma and all of that. But at this phase in my life, I'm like, I need more of like coach therapy, you know, like somebody who's really helping me hold myself accountable to my goals and my boundaries and my commitments to myself and has done what I've done, you know, or is has experienced the things that I experience. So I just hope people, when they think of therapy, it's like, it doesn't have to be this traditional sitting on the couch type for it to be beneficial.
Yeah, I've heard someone explain it as like, therapy is healing the past, coaching is working towards the future. And I really like that, because like you say, I think both are relevant. I would say the best thing I've ever done in terms of like healing past, like I've done so much therapy, plant medicine, all the things, but the absolute best was going to Hoffman. Hoffman was game changer. I recommend it to every single person in the world. I think it is an, I think it's unbeatable. Hoffman, I'm going to just be on the Hoffman. And so many, I get so many letters and cards from people that hear me talk about Hoffman and end up going. Cause when you're there, you write a card to someone, the person that referred you, and they just, they have everyone's address and they send it off. It's amazing. And I just love it. It's, it, it changes your life. You can't go to Hoffman and leave the same person. And then coaching, I love, I do 3 sessions a month, very religiously, no matter what's going on in my life. And I think it's an absolute game changer. So if you don't have a coach or a therapist, definitely something to look into.
Yeah.
Okay. Final question. I feel like we have to answer this one.
Oh yeah. This is a good one. I had to scroll down a little. Here we are.
We see,
okay, wait, I'm going to ask you this because I feel like you're closer to this than I am. I want to hear you. So okay. I'm a new mama and honestly feeling like I'm going through a full midlife crisis. My whole identity has shifted and my business feels like it's hanging on by a thread. How do I get my mindset right and build the confidence to do it all in this new season of life without sacrificing my marriage, my health, or my time with my family in the process?
Oh, it's such a good one. Like, you can even feel the emotion. I know. In that question. I'm
like, there's so many things, like so many subtopics in there.
I know. Like, want to give you a hug first and foremost. Okay. My advice. So yeah, Noemi is going to be 2 in May. So I feel like I'm really coming out of the postpartum cloud. I think the first thing that I would say is you have to remember that this is temporary. I mean, yes, you probably have changed and you probably will never be the same again, but, and not in a bad way. Right now, when you're in that phase, and I think this goes for a lot of people who are in transition, who don't know what's coming next, it's really hard to be so in it that you can't see the wood for the trees and you don't know what's on the other side of it. That's really uncomfortable for us as humans, not to mention the sleep deprivation, your hormones being everywhere, learning how to be a mother when there's no rule book on this. It's generally just a hard, sticky period to be in. So first, just accept that it's going to take time, and no matter what you do, you cannot compress the timeline, you cannot rush it. This is a biological process that you get to go through. That's the first thing that I would say. In terms of your business hanging on by a thread, if you are feeling misaligned with your business and you don't know where you want to go, I would say refrain from making long-term decisions. Based on whatever your situation is, you know, if you need the business to be bringing in money right now and you still don't know what you want to do, choose the short-term things that feel in alignment or feel like they'll help you reach your goals for now. Don't make long-term decisions, because with each milestone that will come ahead, you will probably change and you'll think a little bit differently. So that's how I would approach it. I would be in it. I would think short-term. I would make short-term decisions. And I would do the absolute best to take care of yourself and give yourself the space to just be without needing to know what comes next. That's often the hard part is you don't know what's coming next. You don't have a plan. You feel out of control. If you surrender into that, it can actually be a really beautiful experience.
Amen. I mean, mic drop. I feel like that's, it all comes down to that. You cannot rush it, right? And I feel like that's the theme of this episode. You can't rush it. And I think the sooner in your life, especially the sooner in motherhood, that you recognize and like accept that the discomfort of some of these aspects of it can't be rushed. And it's just something that you have to trust that you're capable of managing and that you'll grow into, you know, you remove the charge of like, I'm doing it wrong. I shouldn't feel this way. I see other people crushing it. You know, it's like all these external beliefs that you have to clear out and go that this is my journey with it. This is my day-to-day experience with it. And today it's hard. And maybe tomorrow it'll be less hard. I can tell you that almost 7 years on, there are still days that are really fucking hard. Like there's, it's just, it's hard. And it's so beautiful. And like, you can hold both of those feelings at once. And when you look at like tools and mindset and confidence and all this stuff, it's like, I feel in my learning at the point I'm at now where I'm like fully out of it, I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. It's like, man, if I had to go back and do it again, the things I would focus more on, nourishment. Like, I think I was so undernourished through all of postpartum because I was the last on the list. Like, I did not take care of myself, even though I thought I was, you know, like, I think I did the performative stuff that I was supposed to do, but I didn't really pay attention to how I felt in my body. Like, was I eating enough? Was I eating the right things? Was I hydrated? I mean, it's like the silly things, right? But they feel so hard when you're taking care of a newborn and a business and a partner and you're, you know, all the other things. So that's one thing I'd go back and really focus on is nourishment. And I think the second thing is, I guess surrender is the word I would use, but it's this idea of being kinder to myself, like going back and saying to like postpartum Lindsay, you're going to be okay. You know, like just take the day, just take it day by day, let it unfold. Don't make anything that happens a big deal, you know, like, because there's so many things that you start to judge yourself on, the baby hitting milestones and, you know, your partner's feelings and the business. And it piles on so quickly that if you truly can get into this place of surrender and understanding that it's a season, like you said, and you can't rush it, I think you'll feel so much more at peace. And that's ultimately, like, you're going to get 4 or 5 or 6 years down the road like I am and be like, man, I really sacrificed my peace during that time for all these other things that like all turned out the way they were going to turn out anyway. So Could I do a better job of just finding peace every single day or something that brings me peace in those moments? And I think a lot of us, like when you look at your baby, you're like, oh, just being here present with them is peaceful for, you know, for the most part. It's like so beautiful and calm. It's not the baby and being in this like motherly relationship that's chaotic. It's all the other things.
It's everything else.
Yeah. And so how do you clear, just surrender all of that and focus in what you can hold and feel and experience? And then like, eat enough, girlfriend, drink enough water. Like I'm not an expert, but I feel like we are all so freaking undernourished and undermineralized and underhydrated as new moms. And we know how shitty we feel as like regular people when we're not good in those ways. And I'm like, imagine if you just went through like a massive physical thing and you're supporting a new baby from your body, your nutritional needs and your minerals and water is like insanely more important. And I just feel I'm an advocate for getting all the support you need on nutrition and all of that.
I love all of that so much. It's so true. And it even just, it's relevant for even if you're not in that postpartum stage, when you're feeling so depleted, look at the basics. Like, are you actually eating what you should be eating? Are you hydrated? Are you getting outside and getting fresh air? Like, so much of the basics. I also will say too, for anyone that's in it or preparing to be in it, for me, I honestly found the hardest months were between 3 and 9 months. Because the first 3 months, you're just in this newborn bubble. The baby sleeps a lot. You're recovering. At least that was my experience, you know, being off work, that kind of thing. Then after the 3-month mark, it's almost like it's assumed that you're just back to normal. And you're not by any stretch. And it's kind of assumed, you know, no one's interested in how you are. How's the baby? Okay, let's just get back to life. And also the baby's not napping as much, but is not able to like sit up and do anything. So it's kind of, it's just a harder stretch. Whereas when the baby hits 9 months, it does become, the baby becomes more independent. They can sit up, they can, they're engaging a little bit more. And it just, I find it becomes a bit easier. You also start to get glimpses of feeling good again, that 9 months out period. You're not fully back to yourself, but I think that 6 month stretch can be some of the hardest timing.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, you're right. And it's like nature's way of being like, hello again. Would you like to become a second time mom at right at 9 months? Like, well, have another baby. I feel like a lot of, like in CEO Mama, we have a lot of people that hit like 8, 9, 10 months. And like, I'm kind of thinking about number two.
And we're like, yep. I feel all right again.
Man, biology is so fascinating.
I know.
But even like this far on, you guys, like over the weekend, I mean, this is funny. We were on our hike and we're out in the wilderness and I'm like, oh, this is so beautiful. Like, I love being with my family. And then I had like 10 minutes of just intense, intense anxiety. And I was like, what in the fuck is happening? Like, why am I feeling this anxiety? What is going on? I'm like racking my thoughts, trying to figure out, like, which I often do when I feel feelings. I'm like, what's the root of the feeling? Like, I go feel in my body. Like, where is this coming from? I could not identify it. And one, we like passed a mountain lion track. So I was like, okay, maybe there's like actual physical threat around me that I'm sensing. But we got into the cabin and like got all of our heavy coats off and sat down. Like my head was spinning a little bit. And I was like, what have I eaten today? And then realized all I had was like a double espresso and like a sip of water. And I was like,
that'll do okay.
Sometimes what we're feeling, and I'm not minimizing postpartum, obviously it's its whole own thing and been there, done that. But sometimes what we feel in our bodies that feels like the end of the world or feels like these big feelings, sometimes truly is just like, we need a glass of water, or we need a little bit of sunshine, or we need to move our bodies a little bit. And I, in this world of online business, I feel like we spend so much time on a phone, like we've talked about, on the phone loop or working on something that the days can get away, or like the basic human needs are subsidiary to work. And I still need this reminder, even at where I'm at in my life, like, hey, that is not good nourishment, Lindsay. Like, of course you feel anxiety. Your body is like literally freaking out. It hasn't had enough calories or water, and it's had way too much caffeine. Not a good choice, you know? And as soon as I drank water, I was like, oh my God, I don't feel anxiety at all. And so it's just like little reminders of, it all starts in your, in how you take care of yourself on all of these questions. You know, it's all a matter of nourishment, both physically and metaphorically.
Amen. It's like when you feel like so anxious or so annoyed and you're like, what's going on? I hate my life right now. I hate my business. And then you check your app and you're like, oh, I'm during my period. Totally makes sense. Right. I hate my husband. And then 2 days later, you're like, oh, that was, but what was I so concerned about? On that note, good chat. I love doing a little Q&A session. It's so, I feel like I could just do Q&As all day. Definitely, if you're in the society, come ask us some questions. We want to chat with you guys.
Q&A is like generator. This is like our, this, we love to respond to things. So
yeah,
send us Q&As. This is like our sweet spot.
I love it. Well, thanks for doing this with me.
Yeah.
I'll see you next week.
Okay. Sounds great.
Bye.
Bye.